103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is August 4th, 2019, and if it's not where you're listening, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast and should try to call in. I'm Dotter 5, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone with us today. Hello, Wombat.
Hello, I'm the Wombat. I'm happy and I'm ready to go. Let's go. Let's have a good time today.
Very cool. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville?
Oh, yeah.
And it has been over for 9 years.
Yeah, I'm a subscriber. I'm a subscriber. The only thing is I wish he would just describe other things than video games. I know he's the angry video game channel, but like, he's always angry, and he's always talking about video games, and he's like 40 now. Like, is he going to do this for the rest of his life? Come on, man. Get a real job.
There's two guys on the show generally, maybe sometimes more, and it's a call-in show. It's not, he doesn't just sit there and describe stuff. Anyway, we'll tell you how you can watch that. It's on about the same time as our show, so you have to TiVo if you watch it, but we'll give you more details after the mid-show break. And in spite of Steve Martin and what have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as we put them in rotation. Today's topic is the Garden of Eden, Pascal's Wager, etc. So
it's pretty good.
You want to lead that off, Wombat?
Sure. I'm having a really hard time dealing with the fact that I used to believe in the Bible like 100%, like only as far back as maybe 7 years ago, and it's still hitting me as in waves because I think of like stuff as early as like what's in the first chapter of the book Genesis. We got the Garden of Eden. You got, you know, Adam, he's like busy naming the animals. I don't know how relevant that job was now. I don't know if God was like, hey, name the animals. And he's like, Steve, Greg, Michael.
Well, was he naming them in English?
I don't know. But like,
different languages have different names.
But I can't imagine a more useless job.
Right.
Just waste your time where he's like looking at a trail of ads and he's like, Bartholomew, Douglas. I'm running out of names, God. It's like, just keep going. You're fine. So there's this whole concept of like the fruit of knowledge in the Garden of Eden. So you have Adam who does not know the difference between right and wrong. But the fruit, once he eats it, he does give him that information. So before he even ate the apple, he didn't know what is a good thing to do versus a wrong thing to do. So like he committed the sin in complete ignorance. And not only that, but through, you know, coercion through another person who was in the exact same situation that he was in. And it reminded me of my cat. I know I talk about my cat almost every episode, but I got a really cute cat. His name's Vinny. Really well trained. But he is a cat, and the first time I got my cat, there was a time when he went into one of my rooms and ate food that I prepared and just left on the table, and I was so upset when I found him eating the food on top of the table that I put him in timeout. And I yelled and I was like, hey, don't do that. Go in timeout. And I have a little closet that I put him in. He's got a toy. He's got one toy, but his food and water's in there too. But that's where he stays if he does something bad.
In timeout.
Yeah.
You punished the wrong person, didn't you?
I know. I felt bad because at the certain point, I'm just like, I can't believe he did this. But then it happened again, like a second time and then a third time. And I'm like, if this happens a fourth time, I'm just going to blame myself because I should know better. Because at the end of the day, it's a cat. And, you know, he can't reason. I can't set up, like, very abstract rules with him. Uh-huh. I can't reason with him. He's a cat. He's going to do what he's going to do. He's designed to hunt and sleep and look for food when I'm not around. And so when he does stuff like that, when he eats food, even though I told him not to, I can't really be upset at anyone aside from myself. And I link back at that Garden of Eden example where you have this all-powerful knowing God and all-knowing God who's like, don't eat this apple. And meanwhile, Adam's like, Fred, Stephen, Bobby. He's like, yeah, I think he's got that rule. How could he be surprised that that actually happened? And why not he just make the tree bigger? Well, it seemed like he planned from the beginning.
Right, he's even more culpable than you were in that situation because he created Adam. He put the curiosity in there, and he also knew he knows everything, but he also knew that he was capable of, what he was not capable of.
Right.
Also, he theoretically knows everything that happens in the future and the past. He didn't know this was going to happen.
Right. And then Adam still suffers the punishment for it regardless.
Right. It's almost like he set a trap for us gullible humans, and then was sitting in the bushes sniggering about it when it happened. I mean, he comes out of the bushes, you know, and Adam and Eve are hiding, and he's like, where are you? Oh, I don't see you. Where you been? Why are you hiding from me? You know, but when he's supposed to see and hear everything, know everything.
Put some clothes on.
It makes absolutely no sense, except if you think it's a trap.
So imagine eating that apple for the first time, and you're like, oh my God. So like, here's the thing. Adam, very much a believer in God. He knows, like, even after he eats the apple, he knows God exists. There's no question in his mind that God does exist.
Yeah.
But do you imagine if there's any, was he, like, at that spur moment of awareness, was there any sense of, like, this system's kind of screwed up, isn't it? Like, wait, hold on a second. Like,
yeah.
I feel like Eve was probably more on the page of like, oh man, I gotta let everybody know about this because this isn't gonna work out. But I feel like, I wonder if Adam felt like, oh man, I don't even know if this was I feel like I've been completely bamboozled and now I'm here and now I have literally nothing else to do except.
What a jerk.
Yeah.
You tricked us. You know, how hard is it to trick us?
No, I was like,
we're gullible.
Yeah. I feel like if I could have that conversation with my cat, it'd be like, well, I never had an idea of what you wanted or didn't want. And so I think ultimately God was responsible for that. And it's a shame that we
He was planned it all out. I mean, if he didn't really want him to eat the fruit from the tree, he could have put the tree on the moon. Why did he put it in the same garden with them?
Or make it, you know, 4 feet taller, you know?
Or
make it an underground root or something like that. No, it's got to be out right in the perfect hand reach.
Or make the fruit sour.
But here's that thing.
Bare minimum. Yeah.
At the start of the conversation, I said I believe that story fully. I didn't have an issue with it. And it's only after leaving religion that I'm like, oh, whoa, why did I believe that so full-heartedly as a monument for what I believe was a good reason for why there's evil in the world? Like, when bad things happen, I had to rationalize it, and I used that story for me to actually feel good afterwards. It's like, oh, well, you know, people are killing each other because, you know, Adam did that one thing he wasn't supposed to do. End of story. Don't have to think about it anymore. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's really strange. Another thing about that is that if Adam and Eve had two boys, how did we get here? I mean, it says that in the Bible, I believe it says that... Cain slew Abel, so that left Cain.
When really and he old found Hebrew a wife. Was really other old Hebrew, and they love each other and want to start a family, but they're both guys, they have to figure something out.
Well, it says that Cain found a wife in the nearby village.
Hmm.
Well, how did these other villagers get there? Adam and Eve were the people who whose descendants populated the world.
Right.
And that's why we're here. Everybody's a descendant of Adam and Eve. Well, if there's a nearby village, couldn't we be the descendant of those people?
Yeah, that seems really bizarre. That's like, oh, yeah, and there's other people here, too. It seems
and what
weird.
About the villages that aren't nearby? There could be thousands of other villages.
It's literally one of those things, again, that I didn't really put a lot of thought into. But I would also say this, after coming out, there's this whole concept that I was also playing with, too, where it seems like the Bible, as it's written right now, seems to be... from the perspective of the bad guy who thinks he's good, but is secretly in there a message from the good guy showing that the bad guy is actually the bad guy. Is that too confusing? It seems as if God wrote that book being like, hey, I'm big, I'm amazing, you'll love me. This is the book I want everyone to show, and I want to show everyone. But it really depicts him as a tyrant if you read that critically.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it seems as if, like, if you're like, I don't know, if you were, I don't know, fallen angel, if you were Satan or whatever, you want people to see this book for what it is, so you're not going to change it at all. You're just going to be like, hey, man, listen, you're in a bad situation. You're going to need to eat this apple. You're caught in a trap. It's going to happen anyway, and you're going to be given painful birth for no good reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's part of his system. Go for it. And I feel like it's told from the perspective of a tyrant who doesn't realize he's a tyrant. Maybe that's probably the more concise way of saying it.
Yeah. Oh, true. I agree. When you consider just the number of deaths that either one of them caused, people that Satan or that the devil killed in the Bible was Job's family. And he only did that because, I mean, after God gave him permission to do that,
explicit
to test his
permission
faith.
Through him, and he could have stopped him if he wanted to, too.
Yeah, and otherwise, God killed millions and millions of people. He destroyed whole cities, gave plagues to
countries.
His followers at the drop of a hat, gave them permission to kill each other, cities and armies, and then wiped out the entire planet in a flood, theoretically. But he's the good guy,
right?
And he's the God of love,
right?
No, that does not wash.
There's also that idea that I'm more inclined, and I'm not saying this is an argument for why I don't think the devil exists either. I don't think demons exist. I don't have good evidence to believe it either way. That's probably the better way of saying it. But I am more inclined to believe that these chapters were written by tyrannical people that were short-sighted rather than a tyrannical being, supernatural
being. Even if the people who wrote it weren't tyrannical, they lived in a tyrannical world.
Oh, definitely.
Every area was governed by a king, a supreme authority.
Yep.
And everything. And you were basically slaves or serfs to that king.
Yeah.
So what other position would they have to write from?
No. We're talking like even from medieval times, like from the point 2,000 years ago to even like the 15th century, just people constantly living up through the thumb of someone else and that person at the top trying to keep everybody else in line. And religion seemed to be a really good way to do that. And even back then, people couldn't even read very well. Like, literacy was so low that you're looking at one person to tell you what to do, and he needs to have the rules and the authority to tell you what to do. So it can't sound like a community-driven task. It has to be, hey, here's a God, he's my boss, and he's telling me to tell you to give me 10% of your money.
Right. I saw a cartoon on that earth the other day. It says, I am the messenger of God. What's God's message? Give the messenger of God money.
Yeah. Send it to my, here's my account number. There's another thing too that I've been thinking about a lot, and I don't know why I haven't drawn this parallel. Since I've come out of religion, I've realized that there's a lot of media that seems to be written from people who also are free thinkers that are trying to, what do you call it, inception or inject the idea of you are believing something for silly reasons, for no good reason. For example, have you ever heard of the story called King's New Clothes? The King's New Clothes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just as a quick summary, there was like a king, two guys come to his kingdom and they say, hey, we have this brand new fabric to build this whole new clothing line specifically for royal people. It's amazing. You're going to love it. And they pull out like an empty roll that they pretend has fabric on it. And the king ends up being fooled because, of course, he's super special royalty. Of course,
they tell him that stupid people can't see it. Yes. So, you know, yes. I'm not stupid. So, yeah, yes.
That's cool. The perfect way of saying it. Yeah. So yeah. Then he puts on all these like imaginary clothes and then goes walk out on the streets. And everybody else, instead of being like, hey, you're naked, are like, yeah, I see that clothes too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll all go for it. And it only takes a kid who'd never had a chance to be like, you know, let in on the story to be like, hey, the king's naked. And that's only when everyone else is
able to realize it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, man. I look at that story now and I think to myself, oh my gosh, I feel like that's so true to the concept of what it's like when you let go of your religion and you realize everyone else around you is still playing the same game of make-believe for no good reason. And you're like, yeah, but I don't think we have a good reason to believe this. Oh, then you must be stupid, or you must be evil, or you must not know where your morals come
from. Or sinful, or working against the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes a kid to say things like that sometimes. You need that innocence.
Yeah. It's so true. I was thinking of something, but it flew the coop. It'll come back.
But I'm just saying, it was a really good fairy tale. And I'll throw out one last
one. Yeah, I remember. The Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yeah.
Every year they give out a, the King's New Clothes Award.
What?
For
That's
people
cool.
Who, yeah, for people who give talks about how they see through the claims of religion and pass along that information to other people in articles or books or videos.
That's cool. That's so cool. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who's like on that same page. I'll throw out one other one. And if you have one too, before we go into like the emails, that'll be cool.
Uh-huh.
But there's a movie that came out a long time ago, like say 90s. Maybe even like 96. I'm not too sure. But it's a Jim Carrey movie called The Truman Show. Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah.
Classic. One of his best performances.
He was moonlighted or gaslighted. That's the word.
Gaslighted. Oh, you got to describe that one. I barely learned that phrase.
That's when somebody is feeding you BS about reality to such a degree that you buy into their reality.
Mm.
And a lot of times, I mean, nowadays they use that to a bully or a mate who's an abusive mate who's telling his spouse that she's not worth anything, that everybody thinks she's stupid, you know, that kind of thing, where he builds this reality around her, but doesn't let her explore it by going out and talking to people and stuff. And we have a term for that now called gaslighting.
Interesting.
But the Truman story was the gaslighting to the nth degree.
Yeah,
go ahead and go into it.
It's like, so here's the quick summary of the movie. Spoilers, by the way, just watch the movie. It's great. But you have a guy named, I forgot what his first name was, but his last name is Truman. He was bought by a media company and adopted into the family of a media company. But he's not a family in the typical sense that we might know it.
Right.
He's actually
He
was a baby. He's now a product. Like, he was bought as a product. So his entire life takes place in this large dome that is basically a city-sized television studio where every other person other than Truman is a paid actor to basically go through the motions of being a person in this fictional town and trying to elevate Truman as like the central figure of the town that he lives in and treat him well and give him food, but really offer him a no drama, stress free life that
they're also syndicating that as a TV show for the rest of the planet.
Exactly.
So everybody's in on it.
So like everyone else can watch the show and be like, oh wow, how wholesome, how simple is this guy's life? I need something like this in my life to vicariously appreciate because I have stress, I have all this stuff going on. But this guy, he's like me. He's the true me.
And you mean back where you were?
Yeah. So like imagine like an Andy Griffith, or Leave It to Beaver, like a Leave It to Beaver esque town where one guy has no idea that he's in or is inside a TV show, but everyone else knows and is keeping it secret. What's really scary was the director or like the leader of this program, who's like the showrunner, and his name was Christoph, right? His goal was to basically give this guy the happiest life possible, but it's manufactured and it's fake. And there's all sorts of stuff going on in the real world, but he'll never let Truman be exposed to it. And one day Truman realizes, oh, something's weird is happening. Like there's some glitches in the lights. rain happens on and off. I can't leave town. I'm getting weird messages from a girlfriend that I wasn't supposed to be hanging out with, and instead I got some other lady, and she's doing like product placement commercials in our living room. What the hell? What is going on right now?
Yeah, it's a very good movie. It's very well done.
Oh, it's so well done. And the great thing is, at the end of the movie, Truman says, "You know what? I got to get out of here." He goes on a ship and he just starts sailing as far as he possibly can out of town until he hits a wall out of nowhere. It's a painted horizon, and he crashes into it, and Christoph comes on the phone or comes onto the intercom, and he's like, "Listen, don't leave." And there, and Truman's right next to, like, on the painted wall. He is literally at a door that is the exit for the studio, and Christoph pleads with him not to leave, because he's like, "Listen, I gave you all of these things to be happy with. I gave you, you know, your food. I gave you a woman to love. Uh-huh. I gave you everything you need. There's nothing you need. If you go out, you'll have nothing but, like, stress, strife. You'll have, you know, people won't care about you. There's things that are going on that you shouldn't know about." And Truman's like, basically at the end of the day, he's like, "I don't care if it's fake. I'm leaving because I've got to know. I can't believe in a lie. I'd rather have the truth." And,
right.
And he's the true man, and he leaves. And Christoph, I thought, like, it's a play on the word Christ, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. Because in the same sense for an atheist, it's like, I can't go back to the belief of there's a heaven waiting for me, and there's a big God out there who loves me, and there's, like, clouds and angels and all my family, if I don't have a good reason to believe that. And I would
you
love
can't
to.
Put the genie back in the lamp.
You can't put the genie back in the lamp. You can't uncrack the egg. I'm stuck with searching for the truth, and it may be that I get something similar to that, but I don't believe the current story that I have right now. It feels manufactured, and I'm not convinced that it's true. So I have to search for the truth, and I'm willing to leave that room and suffer if it leads me closer to the truth. That's it.
Yeah. And so many people ask me, though, how can you try to take away the joy of religion and salvation from people? I mean, you're out there talking to people, trying to get them to leave their beliefs behind.
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that? And, you know, my answer is they can hope that nothing's stopping them from hoping. They can hope for anything that they want. They don't have to buy all this dogma and be a slave to the church and be consider themselves a broken creature of sin.
Right.
They can hope for a wonderful afterlife. And if it was me, I would hope for one without a heaven or a hell, just one that you can be reincarnated or go on to a different life or whatever. Religion is not necessary for hope.
Yeah. You know, and I was having a great conversation with a guy about this on Friday. For some reason, we got into talking about Chick-fil-A, and out of the blue, he starts saying, and I love how, you know, Christian Chick-fil-A is. I think I really respect that.
Do you?
Because they're all about, like, you know, being loving everybody and not judging people. And I think that's cool. And I was like, do you have to be a Christian to believe that? Like, do you have to be a Christian to not judge and be happy and love people?
Yeah.
Or can you do that without the religion? Unfortunately, I didn't say that at the time. But in my head, I'm like, I'm already like three steps ahead of, like, how can I break this down? But I'm trying not to do that at work. I'm just trying to have, like, regular
conversations. The way I understand Chick-fil-A is that they aren't, like, touting the love of religion. They're touting the fact that homosexuals are sinners.
Right.
And that we should pass legislation, you know, to keep businesses from doing business with gays.
Yeah, not only that,
like,
but
it's a very negative message.
And they're typically, like, Chick-fil-A is not run by priests. It's run by businessmen. And if they were able to get bigger profits on Sunday mornings, they would be open on Sunday mornings. But they realized, we got too much competition at this. None of people come in on Sunday because they're at churches, and we're open mostly in areas where there's a church on every block. So let's just not open on Sundays. It'll actually save our overhead costs. Like, but again, things you don't see when you're inside the Kool-Aid jar or pitcher.
Yeah.
There are some really dangerous things that can come about when you just believe blindly. I was reminded of one last story. Sorry about this, but
go ahead.
There's a guy named Harold Camping. Have you ever heard of him before?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
End of the world.
End of the world. He had a multimedia conglomerate radio company called Family Radio. And I think, if I remember the date correctly, he said the world's going to end on May 11th, 2011. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm looking it up now.
Okay, okay. So people, if I remember the story correctly, people from all around the world, mostly America, let's just say America, because you know us.
May 21st.
Okay, so May 21st, we're like, okay, this guy said, you know, he got the message from God. We believe him. So we will just, you know, follow it up by spending all of our money, maxing out our credit cards, selling all of our things on Craigslist, giving everything away, killing our pets, buying, spending our money on billboards and signs and t-shirts to, and pamphlets to let everybody else know. And,
basically, and he spent over $100 million himself spreading the word about the end of the world.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, that's, isn't that like, he went bankrupt or something like that afterwards? Like
eventually.
So he believed it himself. Like, I think at a certain point, you know, when the blind are leading the blind, nobody gets anywhere fast. It's kind of crazy.
Yep.
But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, after May 22nd, everybody woke up, hopefully in their own beds, and realized, I made a mistake. I made a bad move financially, health-wise, everything. And then they go back to Harold to look for answers. They're like, what happened, what's going on, because they still haven't trained themselves to think for themselves. And you know what Harold Camping says? No apology. He doesn't say, I messed up. He says, I got it wrong, guys. It's not May 21st, 2011, it's October 11th or something like that. It's going to happen in October.
Just, and everyone pushed it out,
and everyone waited for October. This is the world we live in when we don't exercise valuable critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
And when we do, it seems so obvious. Like, a lot of people listen to this radio and they're like, oh, of course, like, King's New Clothes, obviously, he's naked. Yeah. Truman Show, obviously, it was all a production. Harold Camping, of course, he's lying. But you don't see this when you're in. And as blind as I was to all these things, it's just amazing how you can.
I agree. Now, I've mentioned this before in the show, maybe a year ago or so, but what kills me is the first time I put together a video about atheism and addressing the claims of Christianity, I put it on a CD and gave it to a friend or an acquaintance of mine and asked him what he thought. And he gave it back to me a couple weeks later. I said, well, what'd you think? He says, oh, I didn't listen to it. I gave it to my preacher and asked him what I should think. Literally. He never even bothered to listen to it, much less think about anything. He was going to do what his preacher said.
I mean, I get the appeal of, hey, I have enough stuff to think about. I'm just going to let some other person do it for me. The thing is, it's just so dangerous to end up being controlled or tricked or being just as, you know, put on a path to ruin as the person you're following, because he's not thinking for himself either. Do yourself a favor and think for yourself. That's all you got.
Well, the person he's following may very well be thinking for himself, but he's got a scam going. He's got a business to run. He's got people to control.
Right.
And that's what you got to worry about.
Or it could be Harold Camping, where it's just like he believes in it himself and he's not doing the critical thinking. So, like, if you follow him, you're going to end up in as much financial ruin as this guy. It behooves yourself to think for yourself. How do I put it? Like, do it. It's fun.
Yeah, don't be a mental slave.
Don't be a mental slave. Hardcore words and wisdom from Dagger 5.
That's right.
So I say we're at the bottom of the hour. Let's go into some music, and we'll come back. This is 103.9 FM. Wozo, low power radio coming out of Knoxville, Tennessee. See you after the break.
Okay.
In southern Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, I beheld a vision next to the expressway. Was a 60-foot Jesus with his hands in the air. Looked like he's carved out of butter, just like at the state fair. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promised Jesus, imperial Jesus, can't believe it's not Jesus, holy old Lord. Well, you see him from the chest up, like he's about to do a backflip. like he scored a touchdown, or maybe melting or about to drown. Well, I've been to the state fair, seen a cow made out of corn cobs, Garth Brooks out of string cheese, and the Virgin out of olives. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promised Jesus, imperial Jesus, can't believe it's not Jesus, holy old Lord. Shipped in pieces on a flatbed, staring backwards was his big head. Driver stuck in traffic backups, desperately avoiding eye contact. Well, don't make no graven images, that's one of the Ten Commandments. I hope the grading curve is kindly, you get to heaven with a 90. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, imperial Jesus, can't believe it's not Jesus, holy old Lord. Believe it's not Jesus. Oh, spread the word.
Time living.
with you.
Alaska, where'd you go? You were there a moment ago. Was it just too cold over there in the Fargo? Did you pack your bags and leave the glow? So case and tags, oh please ain't it so. Hey mister, have you seen my Alaska? Alaska, tell me where did she go? At first it was so shocking, but then it was so normal, I'm telling you. You say that I'm a good boy, I say you smell like lavender and watermelon. Ooh, I hear the kids are talking. They say I'm not too formal, ain't that the truth? You say that I'm a good boy, I say you smell like lavender and watermelon. Ooh, when the night comes, midnight hums, that's when you sit down next to me. When there's just crumbs, I feel numb. You say the things I've always needed, say I'm good and I'll believe it. I feel my tail wagging. I rest my head in your lap now, denim blue. You say that I'm a good boy, I say you smell like lavender and watermelon. Marshmallows, nutmeg and sledding, warm pillows and brand new bedding, birthday cake and fresh baked bread and lavender and watermelon. Lavender and watermelon, ooh. Watermelon, ooh. Lavender and watermelon, ooh.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. Now, back to the show. Now, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Welcome back. I'm Doubter 5, and this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today's August 4th, 2019, and if you're not listening at that time, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast of the show. Okay, now let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. Founded in 2002, we're in our 17th year now. ASK has over 950 members now, and you can find us online at knoxville.com. Go search for us there and join us. Also, you can join ASK in person without joining Meetup if you don't want to, at our weekly Meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in Knoxville's Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation and happy hour. Everybody is welcome, that is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you can still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't start one. Don't find one. Start one. Okay. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. And they've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions in the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. If that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. However, they only meet once a month, and the fourth Sunday of each month, down at the World's Fair site at the International Building. Earlier in the show, you said we'd talk about Atheist call-in TV show called Free Thought Forum. And you can see it every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online anywhere in the world at ctvnox.org. You can also find archive of our shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or the radio show, just come by an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest. And back to the show. You with us, Sarah Wombat?
I'm ready to go. So I have sucked up so much attention on my personal tangents. Let's hear some of yours. How about that?
Well, there's been a thing in the news or in Facebook quite a bit lately about how Trump wants to have the government teach the Bible to our kids by putting Bible classes in schools. And the thing about that is...
So back up, when was this? When did it happen? I don't
know. Oh, it's all over Facebook every day. It's the January through any time now. But it started in at the end of January. There is more and more news articles about it. New York Magazine, CBS News, Washington Post, Politico all had articles on it. But back when the Founding Fathers were writing the Constitution and they wrote in this wall of separation between the church and state, it wasn't the atheists who were demanding that there be a wall between the church and state. It was the churches. Danbury Baptist was afraid of the Congregationalists, in other words, the Church of England, that that would be instituted into American law. And every other church was afraid some other church would get in, and you should be too, for whichever church gets in gets its hands on power, federal power that could well outlaw any other religion from being practiced. And it was not only happened before, but has happened many, many times in the last 2,500 years that a country has adopted a religion and forced all the other religions out of that. Mm. And do you really want the government to interpret the Bible for your kids? How many times have you talked about not wanting the government to interfere in your lives? Excuse me. So do you really want the government to interpret the Bible to your kids? What if it contradicts what your church is teaching? And do you really want the government interfering with your kid's life that much? I mean, education sometimes is a problem for a lot of you. Worst case scenario, what if it's Catholicism instead of Protestantism or Baptists or the Church of God or Orthodox Christianity that they want to push, or even Judaism for that matter? There are areas that are primarily Jewish on the Eastern Coast. It all depends on who has the power to choose the curriculum.
Right.
And what if each state decides to teach a different religion?
Oh.
Like Utah would... Utah, God. Like Utah would certainly choose to teach Mormonism, and it could literally arm itself to fight the state and federal forces if challenged. They have done it before. So really, think about this. Do you really want the government teaching your religion to your kids? And what if it's not your religion? What will you do then?
Right. I like the idea that Utah is mostly
primarily
dominated
Mormon.
By Mormon, because it puts a big wrench in the idea of, okay, fine, we'll just adopt Christianity. Because then it's like, okay, well, then which one? Because you got Jehovah's Witnesses in the Northeast. You got Mormons down here. You got, you know, Protestants. You got Baptists in the South. You got,
Catholicism.
You got, oh my gosh, they're going to be the leading minority in a couple of years. You're going to have to deal with that. So where are you going to, it's already too convoluted as it is. And that's, you know, obscuring the growing number of nuns and atheists, along with people who just aren't Christians, period. It's going to be a complete kerfuffle. Though,
it's just that they're so short-sighted. They just don't see, when they think of teaching the Bible, all they see is their religion.
Hmm.
And when they talk
course,
about putting the God on the money, they're not talking about Allah. Right. They're thinking about themselves. And every particular branch of religion thinks that the God on the money represents their God.
Right.
It's a generic God.
But that doesn't
God.
Include the polytheists out there who are like, well, I praise the seven. Like, what's right. going on here? Like, why is it just right. one God? So, uh-huh. but no one cares
or
about
the Eastern religions, mm-hmm. which don't believe in gods, and the atheists. Yeah. You know, we're all estranged from it.
I would say I don't like the current system we have right now. If we just take a snapshot of like the engagement of religious right and churches in our politics, there's clearly influences when a pastor goes up and he's like, I want you to vote for this guy. Also turn the page, blah, blah, blah in your holy book. And everyone votes for that person and they vote as a religious block. And
right.
when, you know, we have presidents going to churches to host debates. I remember Obama and McCain went to like this mega church to do a sit down conversation with us. Like that feels like an inappropriate place for political discourse to take place.
Right.
But
and they're political machines. They're going to study the religion that they're going to be debating in front of and make points for that religion.
No doubt.
It's contrived.
But the thing I hate the most is that they don't get taxed. And despite the fact that they do have
right.
influence. And so when you have schools in like poor neighborhoods that has a block, a church on every block, and
right.
they aren't paying property taxes, the school system suffers because that land doesn't get the taxes it needs to supply books, to pay for teachers, to equip staff, have janitors, have good curriculums, qualify for state-sponsored tests, like all or you know state-level tests for like ACAs
uh-huh.
or SATs. All
yeah.
those demographics suffer, but the ones that have that one giant megachurch on one corner or off outside of town for where people can commute and like really nice cars and stuff like that, they don't have to worry about that because one, they might get private money from the church directly, or two, they don't have as many churches sucking away property taxes. And so you have like this institutionalized head start in certain areas compared to others just by function
yeah.
of how much churches are sucking away resources from the
yeah.
city.
Yeah, and what gets me is they get to use the same roads, the same fire department, the same police department, and get the same protections as everybody else who's paying taxes.
Yeah.
This needs to change.
And I'm not saying let's not have churches, period. Here's my argument. Limit it to just a couple if they're the same. If there's the same thing, if they're going to be the same thing, limit it to just a couple of places. Like while we have a limited fire department or like a limited police department, we don't have a police department on every corner of the street. We might have churches on every corner of the street in some places. But if you do that, then you can take all those other buildings. You can still do service and whatever you want in them, but they can also be open to the community. They can pay taxes to you know, the local services, and they can continue to bolster the economy both, you know, mentally, financially, humanely, and as a component of a really strong
right.
and financially stable society.
Right.
Turn them into community centers, libraries, things like that.
Yeah. And, well, the things about the problem I had with the things you were mentioning, the libraries, the schools, and things like that are state sponsored. They're state sponsored. Therefore, they're an arm of the government. Therefore, they can control the message.
Hmm.
But that's a problem. But what I, an idea that came to me is we.
Like libraries are state sponsored? Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
But like churches
yeah.
are completely off the books, yet they still have influence.
No,
on
I agree.
State.
I'm just saying that. If we get the government to step in and fund a building, you know, to get rid of most of the churches, then we also give them the ability to control what they can preach in front of the pulpit, and it then becomes an arm of the government.
I would prefer if the services were like, I would prefer it was a building that belongs to the community and a church says,
uh-huh.
well, can we have it from 6 to 8? It's like,
right.
yes, you can register
that's the point
for
I was
2 hours
make.
And then you
yeah,
come in.
Not only, well, not only that, but there's 6 days a week they don't use them.
Yeah, and then...
you know, we could have the, you know, Lutherans on Tuesday
yes.
and Catholics on Wednesdays, you know, just...
Yeah,
and
exactly
just rotate them.
Like, yeah,
yeah,
just have a little row of pews, all the...
Yeah,
and
they only
class.
Need an hour or two each.
Exactly.
Could,
we, and then
yeah.
it's just like, when's your church? It's at 3 from 4. And then when the Jehovah's Witnesses come out, there's like some little lunch and greet, and then we have a
yeah.
potluck afterwards. It's like,
right.
yeah.
And nobody would ever ask you, where do you go to church? Because you'd all go to the same church.
Yeah, exactly. And we all go to the same place. And yeah, I think that would, I mean, to be honest with you, I think that'd even be better. And then when it's not service, then it's just open to community. Hey, we have we have the foosball league going on here, or we're going to play
basketball or something in the gym.
It's just one place, and that place, you know, contributes to the society because it's not a property or tax free institution. That just
takes
up space.
And people meet each other coming and going, and meet and
who knows?
Form
maybe
you know societies and stuff. Yeah. So it would encourage enter. Personal relationship.
Yeah, great place to pitch a SC table.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm a fan of that idea. I think in Nashville, they have something very similar to that. So Sunday Assembly meets at a community center. We have some hours that we schedule for it. And while we're there, there's church services in other rooms of the community center as well. So it's a cool thing. And the old Sunday Assembly Nashville location took place on a campus that was nothing but a bunch of churches. And you would have Methodists in one area, Pentecostals in another, and then the atheists would be in their own tiny little building on this campus. It was really great. So,
yeah,
it's not impossible.
And if anybody is listening to this, lives in Knoxville, Tennessee, and has a building that you'd like to share, you know, for all types of different religious exercises, including free thought exercises, then and you'd like to open it up to the community, get a hold of us.
Nice. Yeah. So how about we go into emails, if you feel good?
Sure.
All right. So I have been in dialogue with folks who can reach me at letschatse@gmail.com. Hey, Doubter5, do you want to throw out your email links?
Sure. Anybody who wants to get a hold of me can either write me at larry@digitalfreethought.com, but I would prefer you write to askanatheist at knoxvilleatheist.com.
Great. So we also have a Reddit as well, or I have a Reddit that we frequent a lot. It's reddit.com/streetepistemology. All one word, streetepistemology.com. You go there, check out all the latest videos that get put on that page, and you can see some really great conversations and actually talk to the people who post those videos, like me or other street epistemologists around the country and world, to be honest with you. It's a worldwide activity now. Here's the cool topic that happened last week. Life is an illusion. So here's the argument. There was a video with a friend of mine named Ed who had a conversation with a guy who, when he had his religion or his reason for why he held a religion gently challenged, he not only gave up the idea of a god, but then went right back to the idea of a god by showing that there is no such thing as anything. It was the most circular, craziest thing possible. It was a spiral straight to.
I've come across that before. If you can't know if God is real or not, because how can you know anything?
Exactly. Therefore, God exists.
they just try to muddy the water because they don't like logic. They don't like scientific method. They don't like all this. You can't really know anything. You just have to trust your faith. You have to trust the Bible. Well, how do we even know the Bible exists?
Right. what do you mean by is? the cool thing is you hit the nail on the head. They are muttering the water. It's a defensive strategy that people do, like I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, to avoid having to critically think about stuff because it can lead to uncomfortable conclusions or even uncomfortable truths. And so what you do is you muddy it up and you're just like, I can't deal with this, and you walk away. But in conversations you can see people do that as part of like a dialogue control as a defensive mechanism to keep themselves even in conversations with talking with anyone. So Ed was like saying, why do you believe in a god? Ed threw out Pascal's wager. Ed, you know, broke that down. There's a way to break down Pascal's wager. It's pretty straightforward. And then immediately this guy says, well, you know, I think life is really just an illusion when you think about it. We're all just energy. Like scientists, they say atoms are basically 98% nothing. So like you think about that, like everything's made up of atoms, everything's 98% nothing. That means really we're mostly nothing. So what is this anyway? It must be nothing, right? So like I didn't understand the argument. Though I would like to bring up a little thought experiment for the argument that Ed was presented, because we like using examples and analogies, but like,
sure,
if you're presented with this as an argument for like, hey, scientists say atoms are 98% nothing, therefore the universe is mostly nothing, there has to be something, therefore that something has to be God, right? You could always bring up
that's a huge leap.
You could always bring up,
why couldn't that something be the universe? Hey,
no, because the universe is nothing. Scientists said so. So here's the thing. So you have a sponge, right? I can squeeze that sponge into a really, really small, you know, shape, right? I could probably squeeze a sponge down to like a really, really tight fist of just like, you know, compressed material. Even if the sponge took up a lot of space at the start, it's now in a really small space. It's compressible.
Yeah.
So is the idea that something is compressible, like it, because it's mostly filled with like empty space, is the idea of something being compressible mean that it doesn't exist? In the same way, we have an atom that we can crush into like really, 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 really small, even smaller bits and pieces. But it's when we have it as a regular atom, it's mostly empty space, just like that sponge is mostly empty space. But they're both compressible. They exist, but they're compressible. So does something being compressible mean that it doesn't exist? And if it does exist, let's talk about that, because that seems to be something that we're dealing with right now. So maybe this world does exist, but it's just not as dense as we thought it was.
Okay, I don't know about that.
Talk to me.
I don't think that atoms are compressible. I mean, you can take molecules, ooh, maybe compress them.
Oh, that's interesting. So, you know,
but I mean, no, I'm thinking, sitting here thinking that, yeah, on neutron stars, I mean, they're so compressed that even the electrons are stripped from them. So you're right. They can be atoms can be compressed.
Do you know, like, the Big Bang or Big Bang cosmology? They were saying, like, all the atoms and mass of the universe compressed.
Well, there were no atoms at that point.
True, true. But all what would be matter in one very, very, very small point.
Yeah. And at that point, it was all energy.
Or who knows what it was.
Our laws of physics break down at that. So we can't really make any claims about it.
But, like, in one spot. So, like, whatever we have now can definitely be pushed together into a much smaller shape and form. And when you think about it, we have planets spread out really far. We can push those planets together. We got breaths of air. We can push those together. Everything seems to be compressible. It's just a question of energy. And do we have enough energy to do it? And
there are even people saying that the most compressed thing we can think of at this point is a black hole.
Oh, that's good.
And there are other people saying, well, that's true, but we may actually be living inside a black hole with its own set of laws and rules, its own set of physics. Our universe may be the inside of a black hole.
You went to cool, awesome territory, but we only got 1 minute left in the show.
No. We'll have to get into this later.
Yeah, we really do, because that's some really cool stuff. We do talk the sciences on the show. Maybe we'll get a physicist or something like that on. We'll see if we can reach out to somebody.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah, inform us.
Okay.
Until then, I'll see you guys next week. I really appreciate this chat. Think for yourself. It's always good. And as you come out of religion, you might realize a lot of the stuff that you believe seemed weird. It's totally natural. It's totally okay to realize that. It's just a question of realizing why you're out in the first place. That's it.
Right. And if you want to hope for a new life or an afterlife or whatever, go ahead and hope. You don't need a religion for that.
Yeah.
And if you believe in regular religions, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. So don't sweat it. See you later. Have a good week.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
See ya. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for having me.